Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voices News Talk Radio program. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, and today's Reasonable Voice is playwright Janine Sternlieb, who has written a new play entitled First Ladies and the Big White Lie. Janine Sternlieb and playwriting collaborator Lenny Dean are the co-authors of First Ladies and the Big White Lie, which is a full-length play that will be presented as a reading in Washington, D.C. in 2 days, on Wednesday, September 20th and Thursday, September 21st, 2023, at the Women's National Democratic Club on DuPont Circle. Janine Sternlieb is a lover of literature, history, and theater. In her role as a playwright, she combines all three. Playwright Sternlieb created a call-in radio book club in Sonoma County, California, and interviewed such luminaries as Mary Carr, Michael Frayn, Ursula Hagee, and Tom Stoppard. Ms. Sternlieb has produced a writing contest of short plays on the subject of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. Her contribution, set on the day Jefferson died, was titled Mistress of Monticello. Janine also wrote The Four Sisters, or Time's Up, a Chekhovian guide to climate change. When Janine isn't writing and producing theatrical works, she is raising money for the efforts of pro-democracy Get Out the Vote. I think, as a matter of fact, that's how I met Janine. Ms. Sternlieb earned a B.A. in English from Oberlin College and an M.A. in teaching from Boston University. So welcome to our Reasonable Voice today, Janine Sternlieb, to the Reasonable Voices News Talk Radio program. And how are you today?
I am so well and thrilled to be with you.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you, that's for sure. And maybe my first question will be, we did meet through one of our mutual political contacts, I think. Andrea Miller, yes?
That's right, the Center for Common Ground, right.
Very good. Okay, well, I'm glad. That's a great introduction. I appreciate that always, hearing from Andrea, directly or indirectly. Tell us first, perhaps we should start with your First Ladies playwright. Tell us something of your combination history with Lenny Dean and how the two of you chose to write First Ladies together. You know, a little history of the two of you first.
Probably about a dozen years ago, I was raising my kids and thinking, gosh, can I possibly return to my old love, the theater? I had done a lot of theater when I was a child. And, you know, took a few decades off. And I found Lenny Dean teaching classes at a local theater. And I was hooked. She was a wonderful acting teacher. And then I started helping her out. I was assistant director to a play or two of hers that she was directing. And we started talking about more ambitious projects. And she kept saying to me, you know, you're a writer. I would, in class, I would tell these stories. I would act out these things. And she was very encouraging of me. And then after I had progressed a bit along in the play, I was brave enough to share it with her in 2020. And she said, we're going to work on this together. We're going to really bring this to fruition. So she's been helping me since then, and it's been invaluable because she has decades worth of experience as a director. Mm. So she really knows what works in a play.
Excellent. All right, so First Ladies and the Big White Lie. The play features 9 historical women, all of whom are First Ladies, yes?
They all could be in my imagination, but they're not all First Ladies.
Okay.
So we start the play, First Ladies and the Big White Lie, in an afterlife. Everyone is deceased, and they're kind of hovering in this afterlife above the White House. Dolly Madison, Abigail Adams, Jackie Kennedy, Mary Lincoln, and Patsy Jefferson, the daughter of Thomas Jefferson, who was alive and did visit him at the White House. His wife had long been deceased. So those 5 are kind of hovering above the White House in this afterlife, and they're commenting on current events. The play begins in 2016 at the March presidential debate, the Republican debate, and Mary Lincoln, who is not nearly as popular as the others. She's, if you go onto the web and you look at the rankings of the first ladies, these others are more highly ranked. But, you know, Mary Lincoln was a pain in the neck, and she was hysterical, and she had visions, and she was difficult, and so she's ranked low. But Mary Lincoln is starting to feel that not all is well with America. This is the debate, the March debate, in which Donald Trump brags about the size of his hands, you may recall.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very distressed by that. The other ladies are quite convinced that Hillary is going to win. They're not bothered, and they're not particularly interested in this debate. Well, of course, we know what happens. And then all kinds of things start to go haywire. In the next scene, it's the inauguration of Trump, and who walks in the door but a long deceased first lady who never lived in the White House.
Hmm.
Normally, the normal course of events is that when people die, they show up in this afterlife, but they don't stay long.
Mm-hmm.
This is really a space reserved for the most feted first ladies. But Rachel Jackson, the widow of Andrew Jackson,
yes,
arrived. We can't figure out why. How could that possibly be happening? And then we come to the scene which is really what launched this play, and that is August 2017, the Charlottesville riots.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after the Charlottesville riots, I wondered, you know how we always say they must be rolling in their graves?
Yes, yeah.
You know? I started thinking about, well, what would the Jeffersons and the Hemingses think about what was happening in Charlottesville? And I started thinking about Mary Lincoln. This was a march. The march in Charlottesville was to save the Confederate monuments of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson. What would Mary Lincoln think about this? So they're in that room, and the Charlottesville riots occur.
Mm-hmm.
This is, of course, Patsy Jefferson's hometown. Monticello is in Charlottesville.
Yes.
And in walks Verena Davis.
Hmm.
The First Lady of the Confederacy.
Yes.
Well, that really distresses Mary Lincoln. So, really, the rest of the play is this battle between these forces. Are we going to hold on to our democracy? Are we going to hold on to this union? Or are we going to go back to the old days of separation and secession and disintegration and slavery?
Mm.
Right? These are real questions. What kind of country do we want to live in?
Yes.
The other part of the story is about Jefferson and his secret family. Now, back in the early 1800s, when Thomas Jefferson was John Adams' vice president, he decided he'd rather be president.
Mm-hmm.
And so he hired a muckraking journalist named James Callender to write terrible things about John Adams, and Thomas Jefferson won the election, making John Adams a one-term president. Abigail Adams has a lot of resentment about this.
Yes.
Still. And because James Callender was so successful, he expected that Thomas Jefferson would reward him with a lucrative job. And Jefferson did not do that. And so then Callender said, well, if I went after John Adams, I'd go after you too. And he was the first journalist to expose Sally Hemings. So the world has known about Sally Hemings for over 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
But historians, before we had DNA testing, most historians said that was just gossip, that was just a disgruntled journalist who didn't know what he was talking about. There's no way that the morally upright Thomas Jefferson had a concubine or sired his own slaves, enslaved his own children. Of course, now we know that he did.
Mm-hmm.
So Patsy Jefferson is desperately trying to keep this story quiet. You know, she lied to the people in the room for 200 years. Jackie, of course, is a modern woman. She's read all this DNA evidence. She knows what's going on, and she keeps challenging Patsy. And then finally, who walks into the room but one of Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson's children?
Mm-hmm.
And she's there to challenge the narrative. Right? I exist. I'm here. I'm one of Jefferson's children, too.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was, you know, we don't, she's there to say, it's time that we start telling our whole history. Not just the history that's convenient or feels good or doesn't make white people feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
This is the stuff we're hearing today, you know, from the people like Ron DeSantis. It's like, you know, white people shouldn't be made to feel bad. Well, learning history does not do those things. It just teaches you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time to tell our whole history, not just what's convenient.
How did you go about, if I may jump in, how did you go about choosing the different characters, the first ladies in particular, but those who are, of course, not first ladies, as you've said? How did you go about making those choices? What was the connecting link for you?
Yeah, so really everything that's going on is really following in the timeline of the Trump presidency. So as you recall, Trump got a lot of flack for putting up a portrait of Andrew Jackson in the Oval Office.
Yes.
Now, the truth is that many presidents have had portraits of Jackson over the years, but he did fall out of favor. And so he certainly wasn't there in the Obama years. That really raised a lot of hackles. You know, why is he using this Native American killer, you know, the man who led the Trail of Tears? Why is he in the
yes.
Oval Office?
Yes.
So that seemed sort of a natural person to come in and sort of challenge the room and challenge the status quo. Eleanor Roosevelt, of course, is always ranked number one
mm-hmm.
in the first lady's poll, the rankings, for her excellent good work and her leadership. She also has a role in this play, as she doesn't live in the room, but she's there as sort of a guiding force
mm-hmm.
to ensure that the democracy stays sound. So she was an obvious choice, and the others are really beloved. They're icons.
Mm-hmm.
Abigail Adams, because, you know, it's I think maybe difficult for people to understand that before the American Revolution, it was never even a thought, you know, to the vast majority of human beings on the planet that women should have equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
And Abigail Adams actually had that thought. And when she was very much a part of this revolution, she was really her husband's most trusted advisor.
Yes.
She died before he did. She had asked him to burn her letters, and wonderfully, he did not.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that she was involved in every decision he made. He consulted her on all matters of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So when the revolution happened, and she was very involved with it as well, she realized, wait a second, all men are created equal? That should include women.
Mm-hmm.
And she urged him in her famous Remember the Ladies letter.
Yes.
You know, treat us well. Give us at least, you know, the ability to own property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he ignored her, of course, but she did set the ball in motion. So she's really terribly important for all of us in America because she led the charge. She was the first feminist, really.
Mm-hmm.
Dolly Madison, you know, it's just so funny about Dolly. You know, there's this confection company named for her. That's how most people, I think, know of her, because she's on packages selling cupcakes and and muffins and cake. But Dolly Madison is very, very important. James Madison was a very shy, retiring kind of person. She was really the first lady. And she was somebody who brought people together. She knew how to get people not just to talk, these politicians, but to listen. She was somebody who really understood diplomacy. So she's critical mm-hmm. in this space. Mm-hmm. Jackie Kennedy will go through a real epiphany in this play, because she is largely known as somebody who is a fashion icon. She gave her White House tour. She bought furniture and rugs and all kinds of knickknacks, let's say. Mm-hmm. People think of her in that way. But she's somebody who really cared very, very deeply about history, yes. knowing where we come from, preserving history, elevating the best of our history. So she's someone who really anchors the space in that.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Lincoln is in the room because, well, we wouldn't have had an Abraham Lincoln without her. And if we hadn't had an Abraham Lincoln, we wouldn't have a country.
Mm-hmm.
We would not have a union. She was somebody who really believed in him. He was so impoverished as a child. He had no formal education. And when she met him in Springfield, Illinois, she really saw his greatness. And she believed in him, and she elevated him, and she promoted him. And she's really the reason he ran for office.
Mm-hmm.
He lost a bunch of times, but he won yes. the most important job.
But he won the most important one. That's right. That's always, I think, one of his greatest stories about Lincoln is how many times he ran for office and lost, and then he ran for president and won. I think that's a good high point on which to end this first segment. We're going to take a short break, everyone. We are listening to a fascinating synopsis, if you will, of the new play, First Ladies and the Big White Lie, co-written by our guest today, Janine Sternlieb. So stay with us. We're going to be right back. Don't go away. There's more to behold. We're going to ask her, how do 9 dead ladies save the country? Stay with us. We'll be right back. And now a scene between Eleanor Roosevelt and Mary Todd Lincoln from the new play by our guest today, Janine Sternlieb. First Ladies and the Big White Lie.
Mary, I am so delighted that you are ready to work.
Work?
This country is on a precipice. You know this?
Oh, I do.
In life, you felt a powerful calling to ensure this country endures. In death, you held the heart of our nation in your bosom and gathered the strength to withstand the calamity you sensed on the horizon.
I did.
I wept like a baby when Franklin won. I did not want to live in that fishbowl, but you did. You were destined to be First Lady.
But look at the price I paid. My husband, my sons, my brothers.
Oh, you talk as if you regret Abraham's presidency.
He was too great a sacrifice.
You don't believe that. And why do you go on about sacrifice? I never saw my life as a sacrifice.
But you had such challenges.
Oh, yes. Poor, ugly orphan Eleanor. My husband was faithless and an invalid. Poppycock. Mary, I loved my life. I cared for the dignity of every human being. I wanted to help. And because I was First Lady, I could help.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices News Talk Radio program. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. And today's Reasonable Voice is playwright Janine Sternlieb. And we've had a wonderful first segment where she told us about the women. All are deceased. Some are first ladies. Some are related in other ways. And there are going to be some secret guests that show up and so forth and so on. So if you haven't heard the first segment, the wonderful thing about podcasts is that you can go back and find it once it's published and play it and even download it. We hope you will do that. Let's remind everyone that the podcast you're hearing today is about Janine Sternlieb's play The First Ladies and the Big White Lie, and it will be presented as a reading in 2 days on September 20th and September 21st. Now, moving on, we stopped with one of the famous stories of Abraham Lincoln and the fact that he ran for so many political offices, and of course he became our 16th president. And also, not only is this reading at Washington, D.C., but this is about Charlottesville. It was inspired by the events of Charlottesville, Virginia in August 2017, which I happened to be, by the way, in Charlottesville on that day. And you may recall, ladies and gentlemen, that Susan Breaux, the mother of the woman who was killed on that day, has been on The Reasonable Voices as well. And I was there in Charlottesville attending an event that was very much involved with Andrea Miller, who introduced our guest to me today, Janine Sternley. So, Janine, let's pick up where we left off. I think I threw out a question: how do 9 dead women save the country? How's that for a question?
It's a great question. And the short answer is they tell the truth.
Mm.
It's really up to Patsy Jefferson, who's been peddling this lie that she is the only child who survived Thomas Jefferson. And her father could do no wrong. And there's no possible way that this relationship with Sally Hemings ever happened. And, you know, so she's pushing against not only lots of historical data and firsthand accounts, but also now the DNA, of course, we have. And even Monticello has finally admitted, right, and doing an excellent job of telling the history of the Hemingses family and all of the enslaved people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the truth is that Monticello, for all its beauty, was a slave labor camp on one level. Yes, it was this lovely plantation. I was just there myself a few months ago. It's beautiful, but we can't keep whitewashing our history. We have to start telling the truth. And when they start telling the truth, they save the country. Let me just also say that I was originally going to end the play after the 2020 election, but something told me that we would not have a peaceful transfer of power.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, let's wait till the inauguration. And I'm so glad I did, because all of those events, the election of 2020, the January 6th insurrection, and the inauguration of Joe Biden, all are in the play.
Mm-hmm. Which answers one of my questions. Do you and Lenny Dean address America's current cultural wars in your First Lady's script? And I guess all that you've been saying has pretty much said that. But I love the fact that your short answer, they tell the truth. And how do you think Americans are responding to the truth in your play as well as in our lives?
Right. So, we're seeing this happening. Florida is really the best example. Ron DeSantis is appointed a woman from Moms for Liberty, I believe is the name of the group, right? This is a censorship group. They're mm-hmm. wanting to take books off the shelves, close the libraries, you know, tell us what we can read. This is exactly what we've always done in our country. I mean, look back at the gag rule. When John Quincy Adams, he also was a one-term president, and a few years later he ran for a House seat.
Mm-hmm.
So he was quite elderly, and he was very opposed to slavery, and he was constantly bringing up measures. You know, we need to talk. We just need to talk about slavery.
Yes.
And the South, the South imposed a gag rule. We're not going to talk about slavery. No, we can't talk about it. Well, this is exactly what's happening, right? We're not going to talk about homosexuality. We're not going to talk about slavery. We're not going to talk about white people enslaving black people. I mean, this is insanity. But we have a long history of this.
Of not talking to one another about difficult situations and difficult memories.
Yes,
exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. I wonder, we've said this, that you have different locations. Washington, D.C., obviously, is, and Charlottesville, Virginia, and most people now know about Charlottesville, Virginia because of what happened there in August in 2017. Are there any other locations? Because there's one I want to mention just in case you involve it at all. Are there any others we should know about in the play?
Well, Yes, Richmond.
Yes.
Because, of course, after the murder of George Floyd in 2020, the Black Lives Matter movement moved to Richmond to finally say, we cannot tolerate these statues to the Confederacy any longer. So I'm not sure if everybody knows is that, you know, Richmond was really designed to promote the lost cause.
Yes.
And they built Monument Avenue to put these, you know, quote-unquote heroes of the Confederacy on pedestals.
Yes.
And they've all come down now. By now, they've all come down. Of course, we have Breonna Davis in the play, and so she gets to witness what is happening in Richmond.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out what her response is to that when we see the play. But, exactly. But I wonder how many people know our history at all, which is really a shame when you start burning books about it. We cut out their ability to study it, or at least to have the children learn about it. I don't think history is meant to brand people. It's meant simply what books are for. Knowledge is power, is what I'm trying to say. You can't say knowledge is power, and in the second breath say we must burn the books that give us power of knowledge. So there was a White House, there still is, I've been there, a White House in Richmond that was for the Confederacy, and the Davises lived there. And years ago now, so maybe things have changed, but years ago, I went to Richmond and went to Fredericksburg and got one of those CDs that give you the story of the battles. And I know a bit about American history. I'm not a historian, but I'm certainly a history buff. And when I listened to that, it wasn't that it was false necessarily, but it was incomplete. And at each battle, things would go, and you would left sort of wondering, if you didn't know better, how did it end, or what happened, or what was the result, or why did it end such a way if you don't know how it ended. And that was 20 years ago. I want to say that as a challenge to people who resist seeing your play. I want to say also that the things we are going through may be more extreme because of the internet and our international footprint. You know, everything can be seen at the speed of light now. But these things are still going on because they have gone on before. There are certain characteristics that I think it was Abigail Adams said every man would be a tyrant if he could be.
Yes.
How about Montpelier? It's the Madison home. And I'll tell a quick story and then I promise I'll stop talking. But in Montpelier, they were just beginning to renovate it, and I didn't even know about that. I was just looking for a way to get in. And I drove around and found in the back there was a road that was blocked, and I parked my car, stepped over the barrier, and walked onto the property. I found the gravesite of the Madisons. James, of course, the president, and Dolly Madison, renovators, he seemed like the boss, showed me the foundations they had discovered of various buildings on the property and explained it to me. It was a fascinating tour, one-on-one. And now it is finished, and I recommend that everyone see it. And keep in mind that Virginia did produce 8 presidents. But let's get back to Janine and let her talk more about her play, The First Ladies and the Big White Lie, and how it, in her mind, connects to what we're going through today. Janine, it's all yours.
Well, I want to tell you that I, too, was in Montpelier, the Madison home, a few months ago, and I highly recommend it. It's Monticello, I think everybody should go see. Their exhibition on slavery is excellent at Montpelier.
Yes.
And, worth a visit. So, you know, what you brought up about so many presidents being from Virginia, you know, what we explore in the play is also, well, why did we have this union if slavery was necessarily going to be part of it? Well, you couldn't have a union without George Washington or Thomas Jefferson or James Madison. That was not going to, you know, they created this country. Now, it's complicated, right? Because Jefferson and Madison wrote extensively about their not liking slavery, but they did own slaves. And George Washington, of course, owned slaves and actually freed his slaves in his will. It's complicated, right? So I just want to put a pin in that because there's a lot out there about cancel culture, right? All these things that should be, all the, you know, that we should just cancel Jefferson. because he was a slave owner, or Madison, or Dolly, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is our history. We have to know our history. We have to understand it from that perspective, and we have to know the whole history. I think that we tend to exist in this black and white area of, like, well, if you're not going to cancel Thomas Jefferson, then you must agree with everything he did, or you're promoting him, or, well, you know, it's not as simple as all that.
Exactly. So how do we get around that? How do we reach people? Is that one of your major missions with this play?
Well, my major mission with this play is to show people that we must understand our history, all of it,
mm-hmm.
that there is no subject that we cannot talk about ever. There's always a way to talk about difficult things, because that's the only way that we're going to be educated, and it's only through education that we're going to save this country. I just want to pause and say that I feel like I've gotten so much of my historical data, but also my understanding of the nuances of history. We have to really understand the complexities, especially of Jefferson and the Hemings family. Annette Gordon Reed, celebrated historian, wrote The Hemingses of Monticello. I just highly recommend it. She's very sensible about these things. You know, she can really put herself into the mindset of all these various characters and this time period, and it's very helpful.
So I get the distinct feeling that as a playwright, you feel 2023 is the perfect time for audiences to see your First Ladies and the Big White Lie. You want to expand on that even more?
Oh, absolutely. Well, just pick up a newspaper. We have, who's the front runner of the Republican Party? Is this even possible? We need to get up out of our chairs, and we need to get active and busy. We need to do whatever we can do to educate ourselves, but most importantly, to show up for democracy.
Mm.
You have to vote, and you have to get other people to vote, and you have to support candidates who actually believe in the rule of law and who will stand for the rule of law and the Constitution. I mean, we keep saying, you know, this is the most important election of our lifetime. Can you imagine a more important election? If Donald Trump gets in, he's made no secret. He's laid it all out. The rule of law is over.
Mm.
It's not the first time that a party has died and gone away.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this before.
Yes.
Parties can reinvent themselves. They can call themselves new names. They can rise from the ashes and regroup.
Yes.
We've seen it before, and we need to see it now. The Republican Party is heading for a major transition. That's a kind way of putting it.
Yes.
We have to make sure that it does. We have to make sure.
Yes.
And can I also just say, can we stop talking about how old Joe Biden is?
Yeah.
Let's stop talking about that. Because really, we're talking about the end of our republic, the end of democracy, the end of rule of law, or a man who is a little older than we'd like him to be.
Exactly. And which is the greater problem? That's the thing. We also should throw in that George Washington was against political parties. He didn't think they were a good idea. And if we knew more about our history, I think we'd be not only more appreciative of your play and the timing of it, but we'd make better decisions about our lives. On the one hand, you and I, of course, agree and are saying this has all happened before, everybody, but you'll notice Janine and I are not ending that sentence with, so don't worry about it. Because it has happened before is even more of a sense of urgency, I think. What do you think, Janine?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question that this is urgent. Let me just step back and say, it's like, I know that lots of young people are voting, and I know that lots of women especially are really outraged by the Dobbs decision, so there's some mobility there. So, you know, there really are people, you know, many, many millions of people who are paying attention now than were paying attention earlier. I mm-hmm. hear all that. But I'm still concerned about where people get their news and how well informed they are. I have a very dear friend who teaches English at a very well-regarded university, and she talks about politics in class all the time. And she said to me the other day that her students don't know about E. Jean Carroll.
Oh, wow.
So what kind of news are they listening to? And one of her students said, well, yes, I believe in climate change, but I don't think it's man-made. You know, it's like, you know, so we're in this time where not everyone agrees on what news sources to trust.
Mm-hmm.
So we have lots of gaslighting going on. Lots and lots of gaslighting.
Mm-hmm.
And people also need to take responsibility for that. Where are you getting your information? So this week, Kevin McCarthy is starting an impeachment proceeding. There's no evidence of any wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Biden, there's no evidence that Joe Biden has committed any crimes, high crimes and misdemeanors, right? So, but people are hearing about this. People are getting their news and say, oh, this. So what Joe Biden has been accused of doing is on a par with what Donald Trump is. This is insanity.
Yes.
Right? So we have to, and this is, again, this is a huge problem in our country, right? We don't believe in facts anymore, and we don't agree on the sources that are reliable for information. So we're really not able to talk to one another. It's really a problem. But I would say again, this is a similar problem to what we had before the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
It was illegal to sell newspapers and pamphlets that criticized slavery in the South.
Yes.
It was illegal, right? So there you go. You know, we're here again in a different way.
There's been a lot of illegal behavior, but I think I'll crawl out on a limb here. I'm not speaking for Janine. But it seems to me that these issues continue to revolve around racial and cultural diversity. And so we need to look at that, because that's something about the reason we need to know about what we've done that has not been good for everyone in the past is because those things, even when they were labeled illegal, still people did them. Just as what happened on January 6th was illegal, and people are going to jail for it, and yet some of us don't get that. Janine, let me ask you this, and I ask this of every guest. What is it you want people to take away, not only from this show, which I hope they will get, but also from seeing your play? What do you want them to walk out thinking?
I want them to have a real sense of ownership over this democracy. These are really great women who I don't think have been appreciated for their true contributions.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of role models for all of us. But beyond that, it's really time for all of us to see that this is not a spectator sport, this republic.
Mm.
We're seeing democracies die all over the place. We're seeing a rise in authoritarianism all over the world. We're the oldest surviving democracy right now, and it's tenuous. You know, there are people who are watching and wondering, can we even still call ourselves that?
Mm.
More so when Trump was president. But I think this experiment isn't necessarily going to survive. We have to ensure that it survives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on all of us. And it's very, you know, now, you know, I was saying earlier about how we don't have voices that we agree on, but there's never been a better opportunity to learn and grow. I'm thinking of all the wonderful podcasts out there, including your own.
Thank you.
Where you can learn things, and Substack, where you can hear voices, read voices that on subjects that interest you. You know, you don't only have to read newspapers. There's so much information and wonderful people out there helping to educate all of us and inspire all of us. And we need to get inspired and get busy. Because here's the thing, too. We could retake the House, and we could hold on to the Senate, potentially, and we could take the White House, you know, retain the White House by slim margins. But imagine what we could do in this country on climate change and reproductive rights and racial justice if we had very large majorities. Let's be hopeful and let's really go for it. Let's have a real renewal of our country and our values.
Well, I think that's the best way to end this podcast. This has been exceptional. I want to remind everyone that we're talking to Janine Sternlieb our playwright today. And you can find her webpage is her name, Janine Sternlieb. That's JanineSternlieb, as in boy, .com. And she's on Facebook, facebook.com/firstladies.thebigwhitelie. Anything else you want us to know about? Twitter? Any social media we should visit?
Well, everything should be there. And if people want to go directly to democraticwoman.org, that's where they can buy tickets, too. You can get that through my website also. We would love to see everybody in Washington, D.C., September 20 and 21.
Exactly. And did we ever mention a time? I don't think so. What time of day?
Yeah, on Wednesday, September 20th, it's a 2 o'clock reading. And on September 21st, it's a 6 p.m. reading. And let me just also do a shout-out to the wonderful director of this, Shannara Gabriel. So Lenny Dean and I are thrilled with her cast, and we are so excited to see what they do.
Fantastic. All right, then. We're looking forward to seeing the reading, and we wish that many people will see this and that you will come away knowing that truly knowledge is power, and the more we know about ourselves and each other, the better off our country will be. Thank you so much, Janine, for being our guest today. Janine Sternlieb, everyone. Remember that name, playwright with Lenny Dean, and also the readings in Washington, D.C., 2 days from now, Wednesday, September 20th and Thursday, September the 21st. Thank you so much, Janine. All the best to you and everyone.
Thank you so much, Marcello. I enjoyed it so much.
My pleasure. You've been terrific. Thank you. Bye now. All the best.
Bye-bye.
Hello, I'm Sue Friedman, former president and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association Central and Western Virginia chapter, and currently the executive director of the Jefferson School Foundation, which owns and manages the Jefferson School City Center in Charlottesville, Virginia. In both positions, I have wisely chosen to employ Marcello Rolando's talents and gifts as advisor, consultant for projects involving our boards, membership supporters, and our larger circle of extended associates. In every case, his advice has proven to be sound, clear, and actionable. In addition, as an on-camera director and teacher, he has directed and produced a number of publicity, marketing, and branding videos, and doing so has proven his expertise in working with professionally experienced video production crews, as well as his uncanny ability and patience when working with a non-actor, performer, spokesperson to produce the most favorable branding products. After the production completes filming, his keen, detail-oriented director's eye guides editors on his team to an informative and emotionally impactful finished product. If you need more to engage this talented professional, let me add that I, like many, have been a guest on Marcello's podcast, The Reasonable Voices, with exceptional results. Thank you for this opportunity. This is Sue Friedman encouraging you to contact Marcello Rolando.
Hi, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. The Crucifixion of America. All we like sheep have gone astray confesses our crucifixion from within. While neither global nor American first, domestic monsters seek to agitate the still tyrant voice within each of us. MAGA Republicans are increasing dissembling havoc, supporting a get-out-of-jail-free card for Trump Lifetime Criminal Achievement Award, using mesmerized minions, craving to be the welcome mat of a self-proclaimed shooter of someone on Fifth Avenue, while still guaranteeing his craven needs with malice aforethought to chisel American exceptionalism into his own image. While America has never been perfectly aligned with its legacy from what we put on parchment, proclaiming and claiming justice for all, Since 6 January 2021, however, Our House Divided has become a rallying cry for fundraising, mind-bending, and vote-getting and losing for one of our two major political parties. As the climate we've changed raises our weather temperatures, so too we're raising our anger, hate, gnashing of teeth, and clenched fists, allowing corporatism's wolves to claw out America's heartland and infiltrate the Bible Belt with their hoopla of la merde spread lavishly throughout all of America, doping up the desperately frustrated into national suicide. Thus have we stepped into the danger zone of too close to recall, both America's promised land of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and our planet's livable earth, water, and air, now also fired up to self-destruct. Still, he who claims he is the chosen one strides dangerously close to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, aided and abetted by superficially good people, Joe Manchin and RFK Jr., and bad people, Kevin McCarthy and Ron DeSantis, on both sides, reflecting each other's contest in Stupid Is as Stupid Does. Yet, only the right side decries by example that their very survival depends on America's failure to deliver on the promises of our Constitution's Bill of Rights, emancipating Gettysburg Address, and arguably, most importantly, our 14th Amendment. Further, arguably, since August 1945, when American political, military, industrial complex harbingers killed between 129,000 and 226,000 people, most of whom were civilians, and then in April 2004, monkey see, money do from black gold, our Bush-Cheney administration having invaded an Iraq innocent only of 9/11 attacks on America, illustrating Made in the USA resolve to use global campaign against terrorists impeding powerful American terrorists from gutting oil profits gluttony, the true raison d'etre for axes of evil, snake oil, repeatedly bombing Fallujah, causing, 1, countless Iraqi civilian deaths for profit, 2, increase in Al Jazeera's hate for all Americans, 3, reincarnation of the ugly American through American war criminals G.W. and Tricky Dick II, 4, in the name of we, the American people, the Guantanamo Bay detention facility still operating as a remnant of the War on Terror euphemism. 5. America's branding as practitioners of waterboarding and, akin to World War II Axis powers, torturing prisoners of war. Too often, America's historical MO stigmatizes our current events, including the anti-wisdom choice to abandon, discard, and replace experienced Americans with the latest fad, device, or artificial intelligence bull hockey from spewing bankrolled mouthpieces. The ever-increasing weight of the reactionary conservative third of Americans is antithetical to our national evolution and individual progression, because refusing any accountability for the rape we've allowed filthy rich politicians and their filthy rich corporate puppeteers to reap from our country and planet transforms us into a momentarily mum McConnell and foul-fetid, fuming former figurehead Führer, instead of paralleling Maya Angelou and Tom Hanks, for example. Although centuries younger than most of the world, America and Americans are old enough to remember a nation ignorant of its history is doomed to repeat the folly of placing individual faith in our youthful assumed invincibility. When defined by those calculating quality time in Instagram followers, Facebook likes, or worse, how the neighborhood has changed, it's wise to ponder through the art of comedy, tragedy of loss, even the melodrama of transversing the comings and goings of inevitable emotional tides, diminishing some relationships, until ultimately, through the tears and laughter of satire, we glean the wisdom of learning from farcical aging. Then, living ever forward, we may outrun Father Time for a pace. In this our age of climate consequences, we need to expect to be called upon individually to emulate Irina Sendler, who was Warsaw's Schindler for infants and children. And remember James Waterman Wise Jr.'s warning, when fascism comes to America, it will not be identified with any shirt, movement, nor with an insignia, but it will probably be wrapped up in the American flag and heralded as a plea for liberty and preservation of the Constitution. Ah, an aha moment, perhaps? A big liar racially similar to those historically vulnerable to big lies, infringing upon our commonality, perceived superiority. An American traitor, preying on our economic inequality, affirmative action jealousy, and cultural fears of being replaced by diversity. Our ballot, our choice. I'm Marcello Rolando, the reasonable voice, and I know where my voice belongs. I wish the same for you. Thank you, and join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of The Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.